Listen up, MuggleCast listeners. Summer is here, and what better time than now to say big at GoDaddy.com. Get your own shared hosting account with 150 gigs of storage, 1,500 gigs of bandwidth, and 500 email accounts for $6.64 per month when you sign up for 1 year. Plus, by entering code POTTER, that's P-O-T-T-E-R, you will receive an additional 20% off of any 1, 2, or 3 year shared hosting plan. Some restrictions apply. Check out the site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
This is Professor McGonagall welcoming you to all to MuggleCast, hoping you enjoyed. Dobby, come here. Dobby!
Yes, well, I'd just like to say how very pleased I am to introduce MuggleCast to all of you. Thank you.
Because it's not every day you turn the big 150, this is MuggleCast episode 150 for June 23rd, 2008. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 150th episode of MuggleCast.
Yay! Woo!
Da, 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 da.
You didn't hire a band or anything to play?
I know, I was waiting for a clip or something.
Well, GoDaddy hasn't been doing so well, so...
Oh. Well, I'm just frankly amazed that we made it this far without killing each other yet. I mean...
I know.
150 episodes is a long time, guys.
Oh, I was just saying, well, why do you think there's only 4 people on the show today?
Oh, yeah. About that.
Well, it's our 150th introduction. You know, I mean, we say 150, but then you have to... You have to remember that, you know, we've done these mini shows and we've done Leaky Mug. So while it feels like 150, it's not 150.
It's more like 175 or something like that.
Right, exactly.
Oh, God.
Anyway, we have a very exciting show today for everybody. We're going to be taking a look back at some of the best of MuggleCast as submitted by all of our wonderful listeners who have been listening for such a long time. And we got some other stuff going on. So I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Mike Tannenbaum.
And I'm Matt Britton.
Way to sound subdued, Matt.
What he does is he always like copies whatever the last person, their voice tone.
But he didn't sound like he was sure of who he was.
I'm Matt Britton. Oh my god, I'm Matt Britton. Matt Britton. All right, Micah, give us the news.
Well, I've never actually heard you say it like that before.
I've been listening to a lot of Howard Stern lately, so I'm in a more broadcast news anchor sort of mood these days. So give us the news.
Okay.
God, will you stop plugging Howard Stern?
Hey now. Anyway, what's going on in the news, Micah?
Well, over the last week or so, we had a bit of a mini-movie fiasco going on, and this was back last Sunday on June 15th. The Sunday Mirror, the most reputable of papers over in Britain, reported that J.K. Rowling had written a mini-movie script to be taped for the Wizarding World of Harry Potter theme park, and... They said that the trio was going to be involved and they were going to film this prior to Deathly Hallows. And it seemed that this had a lot of credibility because MTV, even a couple days later, on one of their movie blogs made a post about how they had been in contact with Warner Brothers or somebody over at Warner Brothers, and they had not really confirmed nor denied, but the person seemed to think that because of the fact that a lot of the rides at Universal Studios that are related to movies have these sort of mini movies, that it was probably going to happen. And then, of course, a couple days after that, Warner Brothers issues a statement saying that no scripts for any films related to the prequel that J.K. Rowling had written for charity or for any other purposes were in the works at this time. So I think more so than anything else, maybe we were just digging for news and it's not really there.
Yeah, I
think this is a possibility, though. Like, you can definitely see something like this happening. It's happened on other rides before. Like, you know, in Disney, you see tons of extra appearances by the characters in their film modes.
Well, they
so
can
to speak.
Also do like a mini movie that people come in and watch it in like 3D or something, like in theme parks in Walt Disney World and Disneyland and other theme parks where you go in, put on your 3D goggles and watch the movie. And it has sometimes it's like four dimensional where you can like feel the smoke coming at you or just other things.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the point is, does it exist? Does this exist, Laura? Can you see this happening?
Oh, I think so. I mean, just because, I mean, I've been there and that's how so many of the rides are in this theme park, especially as you're waiting in line, because the lines for these rides tend to be obnoxiously long. So not only will they film some sort of mini movie for the ride, but they'll film something to keep you entertained while you're standing in line. So I don't see how they could really have this whole Harry Potter section and then not have any kind of movie interaction. It wouldn't really make sense with the rest of the park.
Right. Definitely. What else is going on?
Well, something that was of note was that the prequel that J.K. Rowling did write for charity actually ended up attracting 70,000 visitors over to Waterstone's website. Which
I'll muggle that next.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, it's not really that big of a news story, but you know, I thought it was kind of interesting, and we needed something to talk about. Next, as you said, Entertainment Weekly made a list. Now, this kind of seemed a little bit odd to me. They created a list of 1,000 new classics. That's a lot, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
I find it hard to believe that you could find 1,000 new classics. And new and classic don't really go together. That's kind of a oxymoron.
Well, it's almost like, I mean, generally, if you call something a classic, it's kind of a very restricted field.
Right.
Of things, you know, and it's like to pick 1,000 of them, it seems somewhat overwhelming. It's like, okay, so are we classifying something as a classic just because it's popular, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That's what bothered me about this. That, like you mentioned, there's a little bit too many of them to name them classics. But anyway, J.K. Rowling was named the top favorite author. Really no surprise there. But Goblet of Fire was listed as the number two best read between 1983 and 2008. Interesting. Why Goblet of Fire?
What is this based off of? This wasn't people voting in a poll, right?
I honestly don't know. You made the post. Sorry.
So I did. I don't know. I think this was picked within the editors at Entertainment Weekly. It's like Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
I mean, does anyone here think it's a classic in the past 20 years or whatever?
Well,
years?
I think the Harry Potter books as a collective series are classics.
Right, right. So why does it say Goblet of Fire?
I mean, honestly, if I don't like to choose favorites with Harry Potter because there are things from all the books that I love. But I've always been especially partial to the fourth book. So I can kind of see where they're coming from.
I just remember that Goblet of Fire had like the biggest release party of the books to date.
I think Goblet of Fire, no. That was the first book that actually had release parties.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, nobody went to Prisoner of Azkaban. That was, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's kind of weird, though. I mean, I don't know. What would you guys pick as a classic if you just had to pick one?
Out of Harry Potter?
Or... Yeah.
Hmm.
I would pick the first.
Well, if you define classic, it would be the first.
Right, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
I would agree with that.
But you mean like, I mean, are you talking in terms of like sequential order or like, you know?
No, well, I guess I'm saying the definition of a classic would be something that, you know, 100 years from now, people will still be enjoying.
Well, in classic, you know, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, as classic, you go for originality, and Sorcerer's Stone was the first book.
That's true. That's a fair point.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
So, and there were just a couple of other things that made some of Entertainment Weekly's lists. The death of Cedric Diggory was listed in the 25 classic death scenes. Now, again,
nice.
Goblet of Fire is...
Yeah, someone who put this list together was obviously a big Goblet of Fire fan, I think.
Right. I also wondered, looking at those two things, if maybe it was because that's sort of when the series starts to really turn and it moves more from, you know, the happy end of things, the magical side of things, to the more serious and dark side.
Well, how do you think J.K. Rowling feels about this list? Because she said that The Goblet of Fire is her least favorite book of the series also. And this turns out to be the biggest classic.
No, I don't think she probably is thinking WTF too.
I'm sure she speaks in those terms. I'm sure she walks around going WTF.
LOL.
Oh my god.
I'm sure LOL. If she looks in the MuggleNet comments, she sees comments like that.
WTF. Yep.
Anyway, and lastly, the most depressing news of the week, Micah.
Hold on. You left out Mary Grand Prix and her Sorcerer's Stone cover.
Oh, God, you're still on this? Come on.
Yeah, number 20 of the top 25 classic covers. Come on.
Great, great. That's nice.
The most depressing news, what are you talking about?
The trailer.
The fact that it's 5 years since Order of the Phoenix was released?
No. No teaser trailer. With
oh,
Get Smart.
No teaser trailer. Yeah.
Oh.
What's up with that?
I don't know. I think it looks like
we're missing a picture. Come on, we don't have a picture.
We don't have our weekly picture. Something's really up. I actually got excited the other day. Someone was like, "New picture in Borders email," but it was like a fake Half-Blood Prince cover. It was weird, and like Borders actually distributed. But so no trailer. It looks like it'll be with Dark Knight, unless WB comes completely out of the blue and releases it with Wally this week.
But that's the Dark Knight's in a month away, though.
Yeah.
Well, has it ever happened?
If they release it with Wally and I have to go see that movie, I'm going to be very upset.
You don't want to see Wally?
No.
Why not?
Why
not? It looks inane.
It looks fantastic. Do your Wally impression, Matt.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
He's so cute. Wally's so cute. Okay. Fine, Laura. Think what you want.
Has it ever happened before that there is no teaser trailer? I mean, could we just get a regular trailer in a couple months?
No, there have always been teaser trailers.
I think, though, I'm going to put some money down on this bet. Now that Get Smart is out of the way, Warner Brothers will have more time to focus on Harry Potter. So then they will, you know, start releasing more stuff related to Half-Blood Prince. I'm just a betting man, though.
Do you think that's the reason why they haven't released any promos? Because they want everyone to center on Dark Knight?
I think the people within WB who handle Harry Potter are busy with Get Smart right now.
Uh-huh.
I'm just a betting man. So anyway, thank you, Micah, for that. Let's move along to the announcements. Laura, it's
Andrew.
Time for your weekly announcement.
Well, I don't understand how this has become my weekly announcement, but
it's because
somehow
you
it
live
has.
There. Did you?
I did live there. Yeah. Well, not there, but I did live in Texas.
That's exactly why. That's exactly why it's yours, because it was Dallas, and you know we would always talk to you about Dallas.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going home.
Yeah, so. I'm so excited. I'm going to the land of my childhood this summer, and
nobody cares. Talk about Portis.
You know what? I was about to say that I'm going to be there with some of my best friends, but you know what? Now I just don't want to talk anymore. So you know what?
Okay, Matt, you want to talk about it?
Guys, just go. Just go to Portis. You want to see us.
It's going to be fun. Register now.
But no, in all seriousness, Portis2008.org, it's going to be from July 10th to the 13th in Dallas, Texas. We'll be doing a podcast there at midnight on Friday night. Now I have to check that. It's Friday, right? Yeah, it's Friday. But technically Saturday morning. And we're going to have Aziza on the show soon. You guys remember she interviewed Jim Dale with us, and soon we'll have her on to answer your questions about Porter's People. I have some questions about Palooza passes and all that stuff, so we'll address that with her. So, guys, want to remind everyone to vote for us on Podcast Alley, as always. I think we're number one this week. We checked a couple days ago, and we were number one. Yes, we're number one, so that's always good. Also, I want to clear up one more thing about t-shirts, because we've been getting a lot of emails lately asking, where can I get a MuggleCast t-shirt? Can I buy it for you under the table? And the answer is we can't sell t-shirts anymore. We can sell them at live events, though, so in a case like Portis, we'll be able to sell t-shirts there. So that's my answer. I just wanted to clear that up instead of responding to everyone, so it's a lot easier to do it here. Sorry, guys, but, you know, it's all we can do. Let's move on to Muggle Mail this week.
Our first Muggle Mail comes from Katie, 20, of Nebraska. She writes, "Hi, MuggleCasters. I was just responding to your review of JK's prequel that was auctioned recently. You said in episode 149 that it wasn't really a prequel to the Harry Potter story because it didn't relate to Harry's journey, but I think it is. For instance, The Hobbit is considered a prequel to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, not because it relates to the major storyline, but because it sets up the Rings' discovery and introduction to the Shire. I think this prequel, if the whole thing were written, would be considered a prequel because I'm sure it would set up Lily and James's deaths, which set up the Harry Potter saga. Let me know what you all think."
I thought this was just a good email because, you know, I don't know much about The Hobbit personally, so I can't really answer this.
Oh, great book. Well, I mean, the thing is, I think it's slightly different because The Hobbit was actually a novel.
And
she's right. It did set up the entire trilogy that followed it, but it had, you know, a plot to it. This was just a fun thing that Joe wrote, you know, for this storybook. I don't think it was meant to have any, like, substance to it, really.
It really does have no, if Katie wanted to say that this was a prequel in regards to The Hobbit being a prequel to Lord of the Rings, there's no connection between it at all. Because The Hobbit is actually a prequel saying it's introducing all the characters in the Lord of the Rings book, and it is actually giving you a backstory to what actually happens to the main story in the Lord of the Rings, which is the One Ring being power. And in this little snippet of J.K. Rowling's little prequel, so to speak, it's just establishing two friends having a night out,
right?
Pretty much is all it is. It's really no connection at all.
This is almost a side event to what would be the prequel. Like, this might be something that gets mentioned in a story that Sirius or James were telling somebody at one point, if J.K. Rowling actually were to write a prequel. This is so small and insignificant in the grand scheme of what an actual prequel would be, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. Totally. It's just that everyone called it a prequel because it made headlines, you know, in the press. J.K. Rowling penning Harry Potter prequel. No, not really. She is, but not really.
It was a fun little tidbit. That was the way I viewed it.
Yeah, exactly.
The next email comes from Robert Powell, 62, of Annandale, Virginia. He said, "In episode 149, you spent a few moments discussing why J.K. Rowling named a couple of houses, i.e. Shell Cottage and the Burrow. This is an old British tradition ranging from the great houses to rural thatched cottages, and it endures despite postal codes. A friend of mine purchased a house for her family and their widowed father and named it Fernwell Cottage by combining the second syllables of her married and maiden names. A bit eccentric, perhaps, but charming. Thanks for the show. As an older reader-listener, your podcast gave me lots of insights into a world I usually only get to observe from a distance of 40 to 50 years."
A lot of people actually sent this in explaining how that's actually how it works over in England, which I thought that was interesting.
I think it's really charming, though, people name their homes. Just gives it more of like a personal.
Well, you guys just moved into an apartment. What are you going to name it?
Yeah, you guys should name it.
Well,
Cottage.
We actually have a leaky cauldron sign out front nailed to the door. Not to the door, but like perpendicular to the door. So everyone knows that the people living there are the weirdos that like Harry Potter a lot. I don't know. I guess Potter Cottage. MuggleCast Studios. I don't know. We'll come up with a name.
And our final Muggle Mail email comes from Xenia16 from Phoenix, Arizona. Xenia writes, "Hey, Mugglecasters, while listening to episode 148, you were talking about Fred Weasley's death. Then someone, possibly Andrew, mentioned the deaths of Sirius and Dumbledore, and that made me think about the whole theory about someone that represented black would die in one book, someone that represented white in the next, and in the last one, someone, in the last, someone that represented red in the last." Wow. "Could Fred be this person? And do you think the theory came true with the deaths and the books reflecting black period, a white period, and a red period?"
Maybe Laura can clear this up. Didn't we talk about this so many episodes ago?
You know, I feel like I remember some kind of theory that concerned.
Yeah.
And I feel like for the red, we were considering Hagrid. Am I remembering correctly?
You may be right.
Yeah, but I don't remember where the theory came from.
Me neither. I do remember talking about something like
this. Yeah, gosh. We should, you know what? Someone... We should have a new segment called, like, homework or something, where we assign the listeners homework to go and find the things that we talked about 50 episodes ago and remind us so that we
know. Here's your homework. Someone point out to us when we talked about this. You know, we're 150 episodes now. Honestly, once we got to, like, episode 20, I started forgetting, like, stuff we talked about earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's crazy how you forget stuff. But yeah, someone email. Now we're going to get a lot of emails, but feel free to email in and help us out remember what we were talking about exactly.
It had something to do with alchemy, didn't it?
Yeah, I think you may be right.
Yeah, because we did do an episode on that, I think.
We did. At some point, yeah. Because it was all related to the Sorcerer's Stone, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And we said, what Laura had said before, that you know, the three main colors or something like that were red, black, and white, and that Sirius died, and then Dumbledore died, and then, as she mentioned, we thought that Hagrid was going to die because of his name and its relation to the color. But
oh, Rubius, yeah, now I remember.
Okay,
someone email. That's probably the best thing to do.
Well, that does it for Muggle Mail. Now we're gonna move on to chapter by chapter. This week we are discussing chapter 34.
See.
Oh boy, this is a sad chapter. Two crybabies in this panel cried while reading this chapter. I'm not gonna say who though. Should we reveal?
It was Micah.
Two of the four.
Yeah, it was me.
It was Micah. As he laughs. No, well, Matt was crying when he read the chapter just about an hour or two ago.
No.
Well, what gets you about it, Matt?
It's sad. That's it.
Laura?
Well, I have...
What really strikes your heart?
Well, just the whole part where he finally accepted that he had to die, and he was walking so calmly towards the forest and just thinking about all the little things, like how many heartbeats and how many more breaths he'll take and, you know... Asking his parents if it would hurt. I was just like, no.
Yeah, the entire part where his parents come back really got to me, especially when he was talking to his mother, when he asked her to stay close to him right before he died.
Yeah.
That was really sad.
I wonder if J.K. Rowling had a tough time writing this chapter.
Well, lucky for you, we're going to be discussing all of that. I've outlined in today's chapter-by-chapter discussion, but we'll start with the beginning of the chapter. The chapter begins with Harry dwelling on his death, and like Laura was saying, how many heartbeats he has left, what it hurt, you know, and how appreciative he was of having his body. And it's all these things you never would think about unless you know you're going to die. Or I always think about people who are crippled or, you know, permanently handicapped. You know, they see us as being so lucky to be able to just, you know, something simple as walk or reach your arm out to grab something. But here we see Harry being so appreciative of every last breath that he's being able to draw right now. It's really emotional.
Yeah. I mean, I think that everyone can kind of relate to how he felt, maybe not on the more personal level of everyone having a near-death experience, but say, even if you had someone really close to you who died, I think that in those days, weeks, and months following their death, you come to appreciate what you have so much more. So it's just kind of like if you have a friend or a close family member pass away.
So a quick light moment here. I want to bring it up because everyone will remember when we saw the Goblet of Fire, or sorry, Order of the Phoenix, I think it was teaser trailer, when Dumbledore says the return, the evidence that the Dark Lord has returned is incontrovertible. And I know me personally, I was like, what? Incontrovertible? What is that even a word? And I just thought it was funny because then when you read this chapter, the word's actually in there. I think who says it? Was it Voldemort? I forget. Oh, J.K. Nobody said it. J.K. Rowling used it. I don't know. I just thought it was funny because like we were, what's that word? And then it shows up in Deathly Hallows. Anyone else? Just me?
Well, it was a good catch. I didn't even notice what that word was. But
oh, thank you, Micah. What did you say, Laura?
Nothing.
No, what do you say?
No.
It was a stab against
me,
wasn't it?
No. I was just saying that I wasn't wondering what the word was. I mean,
okay.
Well, I mean, it's like I told you earlier, because we discussed this a little bit before the show, and I honestly think that in the movie, they use the word because it sounded more like a word Dumbledore would use, as opposed to saying, this evidence is undeniable. It just sounds so much more intelligent and eloquent to say incontrovertible. So it's like, you know.
And it may be more widely used, you know, in the UK more than the US.
Yeah.
You're just probably just not familiar with the word as much.
I was going to say, it sounds
That's
better
true.
With a British accent than any of us.
That's
saying.
Incontrovertible. Yeah.
But I was kind of, what I thought was kind of interesting was on page 692, Harry talks about Dumbledore's betrayal. And it's the first time we really see from Harry's perspective that how he considers what Dumbledore has done to him in a negative way.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of sad seeing that. Because, I mean, do you guys see it as a betrayal now? I mean, I don't.
Well, I mean, don't we later establish that Dumbledore knew it wasn't really going to kill him? I mean...
Does Dumbledore say that? I don't know. I forget.
I don't remember. But I feel like in the end it turned out that he knew he wasn't going to die. I mean, that's how I feel anyway. But
no, yeah, he knew that he wasn't going to die because he knew about Harry being the final Horcrux and everything. He knew that Harry had to die, but he wasn't initially going to die.
But, I mean, it does really throw into question, you know, did, and I know we've had this discussion before and I actually got a really long email about it, but did Dumbledore really consider Harry's autonomy? Like, I know that, you know, it was for a good cause,
yeah.
And I know it needed to happen, but I still think there's a certain amount of respect that one needs to have for a human being, you know? And it's just, it's kind of weird to see Dumbledore acting this way, because you've always seen him as someone who regards every creature he's ever encountered with fair and equal rights, house elves to centaurs. And then here he is basically leading Harry towards his fate, and he's completely blindsided at the last minute. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, it's definitely, it's not an
you bring
easy
up an awesome point.
Topic to grasp, you know?
No.
Yeah. No, you're right, though. You're right, though. But I think, you know, we've talked about this before, I think Dumbledore was right to not tell Harry, because Harry, being the teenager that he is, granted he's mature, but he could have just killed himself. Been like, oh my god, I have to kill myself anyway? Screw this. Boom, bang, done.
I think this is really, though, where Dumbledore's character gets called into question, because while he is somebody who is clearly old enough to have experienced a lot of things during his life and is far more than willing to die for the greater good, that's a lot of responsibility to thrust upon a child. And Harry still is a child, the way that he did. You guys agree with that or no?
No, I do agree. But, you know, at least, but can you argue that he did everything right? If you're just arguing that, because he never told Harry that he had to die to kill Voldemort.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't think he was certain that Harry was going to live until that whole scene in his office where there was that puff of smoke and he says, in essence, divided. He had no idea that part of Voldemort's soul was living in Harry until that point. So, at least that's what I remember. I could
and also
wrong.
That gleam of triumph in Goblet of Fire, when Voldemort put Harry's blood in him, that means that Harry is part of Voldemort, and Harry cannot die if part of him is still with Voldemort.
Yeah, You know, it's a very interesting debate.
Well, it's a very debatable topic. I don't think we're really going to come to any conclusion with that because, you know, I think every character is flawed. And I think, you know, he's just human.
So Harry decides to tell Neville, while Harry's walking out into the Hogwarts grounds, and he sees Neville there on the ground, and he decides to tell Neville the secret that Nagini has to be killed. And then Harry goes in, well, Joe goes into a whole thing about how, you know, it's a new trio that knows that Nagini has to die, you know, and then Harry's dwelling on his death more. So I'm wondering, do you think Harry chose Neville for a particular reason or just because Harry happened to see him outside? I mean, would he have happened to tell anyone? And is it kind of symbolic to choose him, given that Neville also fit the prophecy at being born at the end of July and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it was definitely a defining moment that Joe gave to Neville, because for so often he was kind of seen as comic relief, and that's really exemplified in the movies. They take a lot of creative license with Neville, and they make him seem very, I don't know, they make him seem very silly and sheepish, and that's sort of the impression you get in the books, but at the same time, the bigger impression I got of Neville in the books was that even though he was somewhat awkward in the beginning, he was always a very loyal and brave person who would do what he needed to do when the occasion called. So not only was it symbolic, but I don't think Harry would have asked just anyone. I think he asked Neville because he truly trusted him.
Quite emotional to see that too. I mean, this whole chapter was emotional.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just how, like, Harry, he said that, like, the new trio that was going to know this.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was nice.
Well, he also put in account that there's the possibility that Ron and Hermione will die too.
Yeah.
When he thought about when he was telling Neville.
Yeah, and he couldn't bear to imagine that either. But let's continue to move on. Harry is, what a downer he is this chapter. He's dwelling on his death more. Big loser. And he's clinging on to every second. So, like Micah asked earlier, I'm glad he brought it up earlier, what do you think J.K. Rowling did to prepare for writing for this scene? I mean, you have to essentially think about what would happen if you knew you were going to die.
Yeah, I would think that would be the only way that you could prepare for writing a scene like that. You know, it's like, and I think it's the same way that we allow ourselves as readers to react to the scene. I mean, it wouldn't have much effectiveness if we didn't all imagine being in that scenario. Like, I mean, have you ever been in a situation where you could have been, like, a car accident, maybe, you know, where you're driving down the road and all of a sudden someone switches into your lane and they're about to hit you head on. And it's like, right. It goes utterly fast, but at the same time, it moves in slow motion. And I think that's kind of the way that we can relate to it, so.
I think it's also possible that she may have drawn on a lot of her own experiences from the troubled times that she had in her life and a lot of the, emotions and feelings that she had herself. And, you know, she mentioned numerous times the kind of hardships that she went through, that she herself contemplated suicide at one point. So it's possible that those things were used in this scene.
I mean, you know, and J.K. Rowling said she was crying while writing the end of this book. And you have to imagine, I mean, if you're trying to think about what you would be thinking if you knew you were going to die, I mean, she may be crying while, you know, thinking about all this. I can't imagine writing this whole chapter on my own, composing all this.
Yeah, it must have taken her a long time, I would think. You know, it's not the kind of thing you sit down and do in one setting.
Yeah, like, you know, after enjoying a funny TV show or something, after catching the latest Extras with Ricky Gervais, she comes in and writes such a depressing chapter as that one. So, and then, of course, while dwelling, Harry finally realizes that I open at the... He makes the connection to how once you grab the snitch, it's all over. And, like, you know, now once Voldemort kills him, it's all over. And he realizes that I open at the close means it'll open at his death. So he looks at the snitch and he says, I'm going to die. And that's when the snitch finally opens up. And, you know, it was really cool to realize what the riddle actually meant. But I have to wonder, what if he said this, you know, a few months ago? If he figured it out, if someone suggested it to him and he actually did say, I'm going to die? Or do you think he would have been smart enough to say, okay, there's no way I'm saying that because whatever I need, I'm going to need it if I ever die?
Well, first of all, I think that there was some sort of magic within it that he had to actually know he was about to die. You couldn't just say, I'm going to die, because, well, everyone is going to die. So, of course that's true, but I think there needs to be a sense of immediacy with which you say it, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. So you think it listens to his voice, well, for the passion and the...
Well, I don't know that it listens to his voice, but, I mean, can a snitch listen?
Well, if it can hear you say, I open at the close, then...
I don't know, I associate it more with, like, the internal realization. Not so much how you vocalize it.
Yeah, but it's just like, how does the snitch still open up, though?
Well, doesn't it respond strictly to flesh? Or isn't it composed of flesh?
The snitch?
The snitch?
Well, there's that whole conversation that takes place at the Burrow between Ron and Hermione and Harry. And Harry realizes that snitches have flesh memories, and remember he puts it in his mouth because he thinks that's how it'll open, because that's how it open. That's how he caught it in the first Quidditch match.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I would think that there would have to be some sort of genuine emotion associated with, you know, the words that he's saying, that he's about to die, and that the snitch would respond to it. If he just figured this out a couple months ago and said, hey, I'm going to try this out and see what happens, you know, and there was no real emotion behind it, it may not have recognized
I think you're
it from
right.
Harry and decided to actually open.
All right, well, let's continue to move along. So the snitch opens up, and within it is the Resurrection Stone. And I'm still a little confused about how this all works personally, but I'll just pretend like I know. So, he turns it over three times, and Sirius, James, Lily, and Lupin appear. Now, was Harry thinking of those four as he turned it over? Or what? Why was it those four that appeared?
You know, I really don't know. There's been a lot of debate about whether or not the Resurrection Stone actually brings people back, or whether or not you're actually speaking to those people. Have we ever really gotten a clear-cut answer on that? Because the way that I viewed it was almost kind of like when Harry saw his parents in Goblet of Fire. It wasn't really them. It was, like Dumbledore said, shadows of their spirits, you know? Mm.
Yeah, because I was just wondering what, you know, because, like, why didn't Cedric show up? But, you know, I have more questions. So,
why didn't Dumbledore show up? That's what I think
that's
is weird.
Too.
You would think that more than anyone, that would be who Harry would want to see at that point. But it's almost like it goes hand in hand with the fact that Harry seems resigned to the fact, regardless of whether or not it was right or wrong, whether or not Dumbledore respected him as a person or not, he seems to have completely accepted the position that Dumbledore has put him in.
Right.
And so it's like he doesn't even care to see him.
He would definitely want to talk to him at this time. Or I would think Dumbledore would somehow want to appear there.
It's almost like Harry... it's so weird that Dumbledore's not there. I can't really describe it. But it's just he's been at every other major turning point, and yet here he's not present.
To be honest with
you. And all Dumbledore would have to do is say, look, you're not going to die. But I guess Harry had to know that he was going to die, because that's what ultimately defeated Voldemort, wasn't it?
So the one thing I was going to say is that I don't know that Harry would want to see Dumbledore at that point in time. I mean, if I were Harry, I'd be pretty pissed off at him, to be honest with you. I mean, he essentially raised Harry over the last, you know, 7 years of his life to die, for all Harry knows, and had absolutely, as far as we know right now, remorse about it.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting about it is that at every other point that Dumbledore has done something questionable to Harry, Harry has always been desperate to question him. Even after he died, like, he would constantly, he held on to this hope that he would see Dumbledore in the mirror. He kept seeing the blue eye and hoping that it was Dumbledore. And it's like, at this point, Harry has completely let go of that need. He's let go of that connection. And I think in this point, he has actually truly grown up and become a man.
Plus, I think Dumbledore was only contracted for King's Cross.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, because, like, if Dumbledore showed up here, then there wouldn't be any awesome scene at King's Cross. So, I mean...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, could it be as cheesy of an answer that J.K. Rowling was just saving him for the next chapter?
Well, it's also the fact that, I mean, even at the end of the next chapter, I don't want to get too far ahead, but it's basically confirmed that that Dumbledore wasn't really there, that it was just a dream.
Right.
That Harry's mind was inventing it. So I really think that it's another, and we know that Joe has always been very straightforward when it comes to death in the series, and she's very against the idea of leading people into the idea that you can come back after you die. And I really think it was another way of Joe putting that distance there to show people, you know, when you die, it's over, you know. Regardless of whether or not there's an afterlife, you don't return right to this one.
But he was in limbo, wasn't he?
Who, Harry?
More or less. Or we'll discuss that.
Yeah, but I'm talking about Dumbledore specifically.
All right, well, we got an email here. Maybe this will get you back into it. We got an email here from someone that I thought we should bring up because I'm pretty sure this occurs in Chronicles of Narnia, the movie. So I've seen this. It comes from Nick15 of Newcastle, Delaware. He writes, "When I was reading chapter 34 of Deathly Hallows, The Forest again, I noticed several occurrences throughout the chapter that reminded me of events that took place during C.S. Lewis's novel, The Chronicles of Narnia. The first one. First off, when Harry realizes that he must die to ensure the safety of everyone in the castle, this is similar to Aslan sacrificing himself to save the life of Edmund Pevensey. Second, Pevensey. Harry chooses to bring back his parents, Lupin and Sirius, for comfort while walking through the forest to his death. This is, again, similar to Aslan allowing Lucy and Susan Pevensey to walk with him towards his death. And eventually, both the Pevensey girls and Harry's escorts leave before they enter their death scenes. WTF? Laura, you got any ideas about this? Have you read Chronicles of Narnia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the similarities are definitely there. And, I mean, we know that J.K. Rowling has taken some cues from other fantasy novels. And I don't think it would be unlike her to, I wouldn't say borrow, but I mean to be inspired because, I mean, Narnia is obviously fantastic. But what's very interesting about this, I think, is that Narnia has large religious references. I mean, we're talking huge parallels. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting because you see a lot of people going on about how Harry Potter is demonic, and you have people like Laura Mallory who think that it's Satanistic, but there are really so many biblical parallels in Harry Potter. It's really quite ridiculous. I mean, just we had the biblical verses a few weeks ago on the show that were on Ariana and Lily and James tombstones.
Right.
And what's really even more interesting is that with C.S. Lewis, if you read that entire series, that Narnia isn't even what it appears to be. Has anybody actually read the series or no? Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to give it away, but it's kind of similar to what Harry goes through.
Right.
What happens in the final battle.
Yeah.
Or after the final battle.
I mean, it's such a beautiful way to do it, to, you know, to escort the main character, or one of the main characters, to their death. It's, you know. Harry walks through the forest, and he sees Yaxley and Dolohov.
Dolohov.
So he follows them back to where Voldemort is camped out, and of course, Voldemort is there with all the Death Eaters, and Lucius is looking worse than ever. And they tell Voldemort that he wasn't there. Voldemort says, "I was, it seems, mistaken. And Harry, in what will be probably one of the coolest parts of the movie, says, "You weren't." And J.K. Rowling describes Harry as saying it with such passion and trying to say it as loud as possible to make sure everyone heard him. It's really cool, I thought. I mean, how exciting is that going to be to see Harry ready to kick some Voldy ass?
I think that whole scene's going to be great, but I'm just looking forward to seeing the look on Voldemort's face, you know?
Yeah.
When Harry steps out and says, "You weren't." You
yeah.
Know,
yeah. What do you think Voldemort would have done if he didn't come to him? Because, like, the Death Eater, like, we know what he threatened, but the Death Eaters look so scared. Like, Voldemort, do you think he would have killed some more Death Eaters just out of fury before he went to get Harry?
Yeah, I can see him whipping his wand to, you know, in anger and killing about five or six of his Death Eaters. Why not, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Sure.
He's ruthless.
So, and then Voldemort sends the green spell and everything was gone. Or was it? That's for next week's
dun, dun, dun.
You know, speaking of that.
And so that concludes the weekly MuggleCast episodes. Chapter by chapter is now over. Harry died.
Oh yeah, I was gonna ask you guys about this. I didn't put it. Did you think Harry was dead at this point? Laura, were you crying some more? I can't remember. You were crying so much, it's all blur to me.
Well, I didn't know what to think. I mean, I was just the fact that she actually wrote it to make you think that, oh my god, he's dead, you know, and the whole chapter was so emotional in and of itself. And in my defense, okay, we'd been reading the book for 24 hours, we hadn't slept, we hadn't eaten, I was tired.
But you still cried. I mean, we were all tired, but you cried. No, it's okay.
Jamie cried.
No, Jamie cried when the book was released.
Yeah, I know.
He had some alcohol in him, too. Which is legal over there, by the way. So, I don't know. Micah, did you think he was going to die?
Right there, there was too much of the book left. And that's kind of a stupid reason, but...
No, there wasn't.
Well, there was enough. And
there was enough.
Part of what kind of made me think that it wasn't over was, yeah, I know that... there was that jet of green light and everything was gone, but there wasn't the finality of Avada Kedavra to it. Every other time, at least that we've seen in the series, that somebody has died, that curse has been used, and the curse itself, the words weren't used. And to me, that made me think that for some reason it wasn't over. You know, I had to see those words
really?
On the page in order to believe that he was actually dead. So, I mean, who knows?
Wow. But, I mean, just that alone made you that confident? I mean, you're just saying that now in hindsight to make yourself look really smart.
No, it was that and the fact there was a lot of story left to go. No, I didn't think he was going to die. It was too... There was too much left to go through. I don't know. I was convinced that he wasn't going to die. And yeah, that thing about the Avada Kedavra I just made up when I read it this time, but I noticed it. It wasn't there.
Matt, do you think it was a goner?
No, I didn't think he'd die when I read it. I kind of agree with Micah. There was just too much story left. And also with all the other characters, J.K. Rowling actually stated that character was dead or was gone, and at the end of this chapter we don't really know anything. We just know that after the green light there was nothing there.
Alright, well, yeah, there you go. That does conclude
chapter.
What did
you think? Did you think he was dead?
You know, I don't know what I thought.
Did you think
he was remember.
Dead?
I can't remember. I was too preoccupied watching Laura crying.
Yeah, I remember that. We actually, you, me, and Jamie were sitting on that bed, and you had the freaking camera facing us, and I'm crying, and I'm looking the other
way.
Camera? I'm like, oh, God, don't let this be broadcasting over the internet. The laptop.
Oh, that camera, the live stream. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the live stream, and I'm like looking the other way. I'm like, I don't want anyone to see me crying. I hate you.
All you had to do was look at the next page.
Right.
Well, I did.
Well, no. But okay, he could have still died, and you know, with some extreme magic, he like, or Harry just like, or J.K. Rowling just describing heaven or something. Now she's gone really overboard.
But Voldemort was still alive. The bad guy was not going to win in this story.
Well, no, I didn't think he was. I didn't think he was going to, but it was. Regardless of the fact, I didn't really know what I thought. I didn't know. I was emotional. I was tired, and I wanted to finish the freaking book. But that chapter was so emotional. You can't blame me for crying. Just because I cried didn't mean that I thought Harry was
dead. No, I'm not blaming you for that. I'm not blaming you for that. I just make fun of you for it, but I'm not blaming you for
it.
All right, well, let's move on.
I know I am, but only Harry could kill Voldemort. Voldemort wasn't dead. Therefore, Harry wasn't dead. That was my rationale.
Okay. Well, whatever. I mean, let's move on. We can go into this for much longer. But, all right, let's do it. You know, I just realized this whole chapter is just Harry and Dumbledore, so...
You have a 50-50 chance of getting it right.
I'll give you a sentence anyway.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Who said it? Who said it? You just can't. I'm sorry. There's no quote.
Pick some narration.
I'm sorry.
That'll drive him crazy.
Can't do it. Unless
pick something that's not a quote.
I can't, because I was just looking at some quotes, and there's not one sentence you can't tell the other person. It's too easy. So that's how we play... Well, it is our 150th episode, as we were reminding everyone, and we're going to play now some clips highlighting the best of MuggleCast. All right, so this is sort of going to be our favorite segment this week. We're going to play a few clips from the show highlighting the best of MuggleCast as a little tribute. This first clip comes from episode 36. It comes from Alyssa.
I think that saying that there is one wand for one wizard is like saying there is one person you can be friends with, or there's one person that you can fall in love with in this whole world. And I don't think that's true. I think that there are different wands that can suit you, and it also can depend on how you've grown as a person. It might change later.
Well, I only love Ben.
Using the love analogy, you know, you can have people that maybe you fall in love with and stuff, but maybe there's only one true love. Maybe there's only one wand.
You, Ben, for me. I love you, Ben. Actually, Ben, this is a perfect moment for this. I've been meaning to ask you this for a while now. I'm afraid I can't get down on one knee, but Ben?
Yeah.
Ben Carla Shay.
Carlo.
Will you marry me?
Can I be the flower
of
girl?
Of course, Jamie.
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely, definitely.
Can I be the best man?
Eric, you aren't doing the speech. Eric, you are not doing the speech.
Yeah, you're definitely not.
Laura, I think the best part of that clip is you just saying, can I be the flower girl? So innocent and perfect timing. Good times.
Oh, good times.
The next clip was sent in by quite a few people. This was episode 73.
Hold on, let me, it's a long number. He, lives in, England, actually. Stupid UK numbers. Okay.
Hello?
Hi, Hagrid.
Rubius Hagrid.
Rubius Hagrid, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. I was just flying my motorcycle.
And, well, thank you for taking the time out to do this with us today. I mean, this is a big honor. I know our fans have been very excited to see you on the show. And we weren't kidding when we said to them, this is the biggest guest to ever appear on a Harry Potter podcast. So thanks for coming on today.
You're welcome.
So, of course, that's a very long interview, but it's just so funny because we hyped it up for a couple weeks. We were saying...
And people were mad.
Yeah, we were saying we are going to have guest ever. And, of course, we meant...
Literally.
We meant biggest in physical size. And so many people were upset. Oh, you guys shouldn't have hyped it up. You should have just hyped it up 1 week prior. Like, all this stuff.
A lot of people, though, liked it. They thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
People who actually have a sense of humor.
It was really funny.
Yeah. They were either on one side of the spectrum or another. Either you loved it or you hated us for hyping it up. And you secretly loved it.
Kind of like our April Fool's jokes.
Some people, who was it? Someone actually told me they thought we actually got Robbie Coltrane to to do that for
us.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, I can't remember who told me that, but someone did. I was thinking, what? Really? I mean, you know, it's kind of obvious when Ben just happens to leave right there. Our acting was awesome on that clip, but... All right, here's another clip. This is from episode 82 from Austin.
Well, you know, I've always wondered, is it possible that Voldemort entrusted information about Horcruxes to different Death Eaters? So not all of them knew necessarily about all of them, but individually maybe some of them knew.
I don't think he'd tell them anything. It's just he doesn't take risks. It's pointless.
Well, telling, how would R.A.P. have himself. Known about this in the first place?
Well, there's always a way of finding out. Perhaps he, you know, used Ligilomancy.
He read his diary.
Yeah, he read his diary.
Maybe he witnessed the killing.
Dearest diary, today I killed someone and split my soul. Yes. Have a good day. From Voldemort. That must be a distressing diary to read. I mean, think of the stuff he's done. Went to kill a young boy. Backfired. Damn. From Voldemort. Don't worry, killed his parents.
Funny memories.
Just listening to those clips, you know, I miss Jamie and Ben.
That was a weird
back?
Choice.
That was a weird choice, you said, Micah? Why?
Yeah, that was a weird choice. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, it wasn't hilarious, but it was funny, I thought. Yeah.
No, it was funny. It was just kind of random.
Yeah. Well, some people,
you know,
it's
actually
some of these
nice hearing these things
stick.
That we haven't, you know. I don't know, because I feel like there are some people who send in the same, like, clips
Probably.
Over and over, and some stuff gets overused, but it's nice to hear this other stuff.
Well, you know, speaking of that, we're going in order here of episodes. Speaking of that, this one from episode 97 was, I guess you could say, one of the classics.
Laura, I gave your pants back, right? Did you get them?
Hey!
Oh my God.
Eric.
Nice, Eric.
No, we have to cut that out.
Did you get your pants back?
I did.
Laura wants to cut it out because it's true. That's the funny part. Laura could have just played it off.
No, it's not.
Were they suitably washed? Look, it's perfectly good explanation, okay? It was just in Los Angeles. She left a few hours before me, and she packed everything except one pair of pants, and I said, oh, that's Laura's. I think I should take it with me, and I'll mail it back to her when I get home.
8 months after the fact.
8 months later, I did, yeah.
I didn't get it until, like, right before you left for New Zealand,
all right,
but whatever.
That's a little weird,
well,
Eric, but...
Better late than ever.
Andrew...
We should tell the story of when you found my underwear in your sister's room. And I don't know how it got there, seriously. So I seriously have no idea how it got
We've
there.
Moved
so.
On from that. I don't want to think about that.
Andrew,
guys!
Your mum must have sorted that accidentally, because I swear I didn't do anything untoward.
It probably was my mom made the mistake. But because your underwear is girly underwear, so she probably thought, oh, it's Becca's. So
yes, it's completely. I wear knickers.
What a knickers.
I still haven't figured out what knickers are.
They're underwear.
Girl underwear?
Old ladies. Old ladies.
Didn't know that. Micah, you really jumped on that. Do you know something we don't?
That old women wear knickers?
Yeah. That was funny, though, because Eric said it so out of the blue. It just, you know, it just came out of nowhere.
Oh, I know. I remember hearing that, and I was like, oh, God. Like, seriously. And you want to know the worst part? You named that episode Laura's Pants. And my mom, when I was in England with you guys, my mom went over to visit my aunt and uncle. And she was telling them all about MuggleCast. And so they went online and looked at it, and they saw one of the most recent episodes. And they go to my mom, they're like, why is this called Laura's Pants? And she was like, I don't know. So I'm like, oh God, my family thinks these terrible things of me. Thank you, Eric. Thank you.
That's unfortunate timing.
I know.
Well, next up, we have a clip from episode 121 from Nairi. I'm sorry, I'm doing your name wrong.
After she says it, there's actually a line. Joe Rowling writes, where Narcissa sat rigid and impassive, Bellatrix leaned towards Voldemort, for mere words could not demonstrate her longing for closeness. That is a brilliant character line for Bellatrix.
Does she not get any from her husband or something? I mean,
Bellatrix does. Oh, well, I don't know.
She's married.
Is that an actual question? Does Bellatrix get any?
Well, I mean, look at the quote.
Well, yeah, no. It's true.
Get
mere words could not
some
demonstrate
Viagra or something.
Or longing for closeness. Maybe there's no magical solution yet. What would the Latin be? Think about it. Erectus? What, you know, what?
I guess.
Magna. No, erectus maxima. Yeah. I don't know, man.
Engorgio, maybe.
Engorgio. No. Micah, that serves a different purpose.
Jesus. Like, what purpose is that?
To make it bigger. Not harder.
Okay,
bigger.
Well, this concludes chapter by chapter for this week.
All right, there's another clip. Another MuggleCast classic. Yeah, clearly. See, that's what happened. That's why.
Laura, you weren't on that episode?
That's why we always say Laura is like, you know, she brings us down. She keeps, you know. I don't think I was on that episode either.
I pulled you guys down.
That was the episode that I wasn't on. I think it was like you, Micah, Mikey, Eric.
No, you said, okay, that concludes chapter by chapter.
That's right. I just chose to stay out of it. I took the high road. All right, next up, episode 133 from Kelly.
Because in reality, they're still pretty young, you know.
Okay.
But it's kind of a more upbeat song, you know. It has, like, some really solemn lyrics, but it's an upbeat song, so I don't... It's kind of hard to place that.
The lyrics are terrible if you listen to it. If you get the meaning of the song, it's terrible. I don't know what it is. I've just heard it's terrible.
I can just see Harry running down the Great Hall seeing Remus and Tonks lying there dead, and then he just breaks out and dances to the song.
There you go. There's a little classic Matt moment. Mm. That was funny, Matt. Good job.
Aww, thank you.
The next clip comes from episode 134. I think this may be one of our all-time best moments. At least it was probably the most emailed. Here it is now. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the program. I just want to start the show off this week with a few emails I got about last week's show. So let me kick it off here. Jen from New Jersey, I just wanted to tell you that you accidentally dropped the F-bomb in episode 133 at 59 minutes 31 seconds. Just wanted to tell you so you can edit it out or whatever. I'm a clone from Nashville. At 59:30 of episode 133, you dropped the F-bomb. Not very family-friendly, as you mentioned earlier in the episode. Jessica B., 17, of Cobbleskill, New York. You said a very bad word during minute 59, and you missed it again. Whoops, slipping up in your old age. Nick B., 13, of Boston. I can't believe you dropped an F-bomb on the show and didn't cut it out. Can you believe this was my mom's first show? Just kidding, but I thought I might point it out to you. Ha ha ha. Emily, 18, of Lynchburg College, Virginia. Just FYI, Andrew, you dropped an F-bomb that made it through editing at 59:31 on episode 133. Just thought you should know. Not really concerned, but thought you might be. From Matt, hey Andrew, you accidentally forgot to edit yourself out saying get it around 50-60 minutes into the show. It is not really noticeable, but I thought I would let you know. Helene, you totally said on air 59 minutes 31 seconds. Oopsies. I know, I said the F word. Sorry.
Ugh. What's the wait?
Now you know how I feel when you forget to edit me.
Which okay, what's the word? The F, is it fecal matter? Is it frustrated?
Yes, man. Whatever you say.
Oh wait, it's. Yes. You said on the show, was. Andrew. You're not supposed to say on the show.
I can't fucking believe you fucking said that. You fucking moron.
Guys, seriously, shut the up.
Yeah, it's really great when you produce like a quality show and then the only emails you get are about one slip up.
Seriously, it was 99% 59 minutes 30 seconds you said the F-bomb. No, thanks everyone, seriously, for emailing in, and I do appreciate it though. I'm Anderson. Jeez, you know, we got so many people complaining about this, you know, going through the cursing ramp, but on the other hand, you know, the opposite side of the spectrum, once again. People loved it.
You know what, Andrew? You know what?
What?
I thought it was hilarious.
Ah, oh, gee, Micah. I thought it was hilarious, too.
Really?
Oh, I'm
glad you think that. That's
Thank you
amazing.
Very much.
Guys, shut the up.
Yeah, this last one comes from episode 135. This is from Samantha. This is our last one for today.
On Broadway, too?
Wait, can I give you a sample to like give you an idea of what it could be like?
Oh God!
You play Hairspray, I will kill you.
Okay.
hey, come on, Angel, let's hear it.
Good morning, Hogwarts School. Every day's like an open door. Every night is a fantasy. Every sound's like a symphony. Good morning, Hogwarts School.
You're
and
done.
Someday
please
when
stop.
I take out my wand, the world's gonna wake up
Andrew.
And see Ginny Weasley and me.
Andrew.
Okay. Oh, let me just say something.
I think that's how it could start.
You know what, though? I would definitely go
to
see it regardless.
I just don't think it's going to happen.
I just don't think we should ever let Andrew audition for it.
No, because if Andrew was on the soundtrack and it got put on iTunes, they would either have to remove or significantly decrease the preview segment on there to keep people's ears from bleeding.
What was wrong with that, though?
I
mean, it set up the plot. My voice was fine. I hit all the notes.
My voice was fine.
He's like one of the contestants on American Idol.
Oh, jeez. Laura, you were brutal to me.
Oh,
what
my
happened?
God. I'm so mean. I don't know what happened.
You are.
Maybe I was PMSing or something. I don't know what the deal was.
I think you were just so upset at like my singing that, you know, it was all boiling up and then that explosion.
Well, you know
insult.
What's funny?
Jeez.
When you started playing that clip, I don't know if you could hear me, but when you started playing it, I was like, oh, God. But I actually said it at the same time as I said it in the clip without, like, intending to. Because, like,
oh, really?
I remembered what it was, but apparently I had also said it, yeah. So it was like, I said it twice. So, anyway. I thought it was funny.
Oh, that's funny. Well, there you go.
I don't know why
that's
I was
a
so
look
mean
back
to
at some
sorry.
Of the...
God, you were brutal.
That was some of the best moments of MuggleCast. I hope everyone enjoyed them. I thought they were pretty funny. I mean, that's only... We got several hundred entries, and I wish we could play them all, but, you know, there's just not enough time.
Yeah, well, what about from the earlier episodes? I mean, really early episodes. We didn't have much of anything, huh?
Yeah, not as many people sent in early moments. I guess you just forget some of the funnier stuff way back when, so...
Yeah.
Well, didn't you guys do that for episode 100? Go back?
We did. We did play a highlight, didn't we? No, we didn't. Episode 100 was live in London.
Maybe for 50.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
No, I don't think so either. All right. Well, moving along, it's time to play a segment we haven't played in a while, but now that the MuggleCast studio is up, we can get back into it.
Make the music connection.
Oh, yes. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Thank you, Laura. What song should I pick for you? Okay, there's a new song out. It's pretty popular. I'm not sure if you heard of it. You may not have. I just heard it for the first time on Howard Stern the other day. It's number one on iTunes right now, so here it is.
This was never the way I planned. Not my intention.
I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry. Make the connection.
Oh, wow. Well, I don't know if I can make... I mean, at first I was thinking when it was... before it got to the I Kissed a Girl part, I was thinking about, like... Harry and Ginny's relationship and how he hadn't intended for it to be so short.
Oh, yeah, the chorus changes everything.
When he broke up with her at the end of the sixth book. Yeah, but the only thing I can think of is just because it would be considered against the quote-unquote social norm for a girl to kiss another girl. So, I mean, I just think about Aberforth and how people consider him somewhat interesting for his... goat fetish.
Okay, not bad.
How about Dumbledore kissing McGonagall?
Yes.
Well, the thing is, it's not that you can compare. It's not that, and I mean, anybody who listened to our episode on Dumbledore being gay would know that you cannot compare homosexuality to bestiality. But I guess you could compare the way people view it socially. So that would be my...
Good job, Laura. Good job, Laura. Mike or Matt, who wants to go next?
I'll go.
Okay.
That was Matt.
Matt. Now, this is another new song. That was Matt. This is another new song. It may be hard, so I'll give you some time. All right. Matt, make the connection. I'll delete it. Let's be clear. Seven Things by Miley Cyrus, new single.
I don't know. I don't. It's such a crappy song. Why don't you pick good songs?
It doesn't matter how good it is. It's all about the lyrics.
Well, I'm reading the lyrics right now.
Well, the music's crappy, and the quote unquote rock music in the fourth movie was crappy.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised he played this. I mean, he could have played, like, High School Musical 1, 2, or 3, or 4, or 5, or 6. Or...
You could say Voldemort. This is Harry's song to Voldemort, because the seven things he hates about Voldemort are the Horcruxes. And that's ultimately what's sending him through all this, you know, this crazy, you know, journeys.
Okay.
You see, from that perspective, I see it as being quite funny.
Yeah, that's okay.
You like that, Micah?
Yeah, that was good. Very good.
Okay. Yeah. Micah, I was going to give you a song from Camp Rock, the brand new Disney TV show, but I decided I'll give you something simpler.
Oh my god, you're kidding me.
Okay, so here we go. Still haven't found what I'm looking for by U2. Make the connection.
Great song. I would say it's Snape's song. He never found what he was looking for with Lily, no matter how hard he tried.
So true. So true. And that's how we play
the music. Connection.
All right. Let's see. So let's wrap things up today.
Chicken soup for your soul.
Canine edition comes from Andrea, 16 of Wisconsin. She writes, "Dear Mugglecasters, several weeks ago, my 3-year-old dog was hit by a car. The days following her death were some of the worst I've ever been through. I couldn't even open the front door without missing her high-pitched bark. Whenever I wanted to get away from the rest of the family or just forget about it for a while, I'd picked up my iPod and go on a long walk listening to Mugglecast. Even listening to episodes long past, I was able to escape my grief for an hour filled with good old Potter discussions. I was even able to laugh at jokes. Though I still miss my dog terribly, Mugglecast continues to be a bright spot in my day. Whenever I'm sick and tired of my house or just want to break from life, I download a few old episodes and go out with my iPod. You guys never fail to make me laugh and always provide interesting discussion. Thanks for helping me through a really tough spot in my life. Love and pickles, Andrea." She also mentions the song that Micah picked for Snape's death last week, behind Blue Eyes was one of the songs she listened to after her dog's death. I'm like, that was a great song. You know, I hadn't listened to it until I actually edited it in. It was wonderful. And some people even emailed in and said, you know, it was a great song to give to Snape.
Yeah. The lyrics definitely apply. And maybe not the eye color as much, but I do what I can.
No, that's the big thing. But that's okay. Yeah, that's okay. You did good. But I think that does wrap up the show for today. Does anyone have any final thoughts about, you know, making it to 150 episodes?
We've outlasted most big-time television series, I would think, right?
That's true.
Are
yeah,
we older than
true.
Dumbledore?
We didn't get canceled.
No, he's probably older.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, I think so.
And then for anyone who checks TwilightSource.com, we're actually older than Edward Cullen. There you go. TwilightSource.com.
Yeah, that there we go.
Shameless. but what about our favorite moments over the past 150 episodes? I know we played fans' moments, but what were your guys' favorite moments? If you can pick a few or just one. Or maybe even an episode.
I'd have to say the live shows have been my favorites. They're always very exciting. We're always very excited beforehand to get them started. There's always a lot of anticipation. Overall, it's just so much fun. And doing the live shows in person, too, are a lot of fun as well. I mean, I was talking about the live online ones, but the ones in person are really fun as well. I know it's not really a moment, but
yeah,
it's a moment
it's nice
to me.
It's nice to be able to put faces to the people that have been emailing in, because so many of the people who come to the live shows will come up and be like, oh, I sent you this email, or I sent you this thing to the P.O. box. It's like, oh, I know who you are. And it's really cool to be able to put faces to those people who are really so loyal to the show.
I agree. Micah, how about you? Do you have a favorite moment?
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with what you were saying before about the live events that we've done. You know, particularly Enlightening, I thought was a great live show. The crowd was really into it, and it was a great venue, and it seemed to go on forever. I did like, I can't remember what episode it was, the whole Otter-Weasel connection. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Someone sent that in, and I was going to play it, but I didn't, and I'm sorry. I actually went back, downloaded the episode, but something was wrong with it. I can't remember what. But yeah, that was definitely a great, really funny. Sorry, Micah.
No, it's fine. I mean, I was just that was a funny moment. I think that was probably one of the first shows that I did. You know, and
Like, Micah, you've really evolved. Like, your voice was, when you first started, it was very deep and unemotional. I mean, it's still deep, but, you know, it's you have more emotion in it now. I mean, you have more energy in it. That's what I'm trying to say.
I hate the freaking Half-Blood Prince pictures. I mean, you can tell that there's contempt in my voice, can't you, when I say that now? I really just don't like the pictures.
Yes, you can. Matt, how about you? Did you have a favorite moment from the past episodes? I see you there on the episodes page of
MuggleCast.com. I actually found my favorite. Well, it's my favorite episode, too. It's episode 27. It was the week right before, or actually, no, it was the Valentine's Day episode, and you guys were talking about a bunch of stuff, but I think the one part that I just most enjoyed listening to was when you guys were discussing Umbridge being taken into the forest, and you were wondering what the centaurs did with Umbridge.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I might have said something that prompted that.
Yeah, no, that was you.
No, I remember that, Micah. Micah was like, Micah goes, Magorian had his way with her. I remember that specifically.
I got to listen to that now. I completely forgot about that.
So, yeah, I've had a few inappropriate comments here or there over the course of the...
You have an inappropriate comment every single episode.
Yeah, and think about all the ones that don't make it to the final cut. I just think it's cool to see how it has evolved since the first episode, you know, and into what it's become 150 episodes, almost 3 years later. It's really impressive. And you know, you guys are a few years younger than I am, but, you know, I've been really impressed with the way that, you know, you guys have conducted yourselves and the commitment that you've had and, you know, the effort
that
you put in
That's really nice.
over, you know, the past couple years.
Well, thank you, Micah. I mean, you're a wonderful host, too. I don't know how we do the show without you at this point. We're starting to get, like, sentimental now, but everyone has played such a big role in this show through 150 episodes, and, you know, I hope we always continue to keep the show rolling, because it's been so great, and, you know, Micah, Laura, Matt, we're basically, Matt, Laura, Micah, and I are basically the core hosts now. Of course, Jamie will be back in a week or two, but, you know, as time goes on, hosts change, and, you know, it happens, especially when you have a group of people like us where we basically started off with 7 hosts. You know, 7 hosts through 3 years, that's a lot of people to stick around, you know, to stay on the show for 7 years. For 3 years. So, you know, at this point, I'm very happy and appreciative that Laura and Micah have sticked on to it for so long, and I'm so glad that Matt's part of the show now because he adds a lot to it. And, yeah, it's great. It's definitely great.
And we're glad for everybody who's ever been a part of MuggleCast.
Oh, of course.
Right?
No, I said, yeah, of course.
There was a little bit of silence there, and I'm like,
no, it's Skype.
Right?
Skype's okay. Bad today. But, yeah, well, we thank everyone, especially the listeners, for sticking with us. You know, we still have these people who have been listening from episode 1, 2, or 3, you know. And we get, lately, I've noticed a lot of emails from people saying, you know, I just started listening to the show. And, like, there seems to be a lot of new listeners lately, and that's great. Keep them coming. But at the same time, we're also very appreciative of all the people who have stuck with us for so long. So, thank you, everyone. That's what we're saying. It's time to remind everybody for, not the 150th time, because we haven't been doing this for so long, but, Laura, what is the P.O. Box if someone wants to send us something?
P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia, 30028.
We skipped voicemails this week because we had a lot to get to, but we'll probably get back to them next week. You can always call in your voicemail, question, or comment. If you're in the United States, you can dial 1-218-20-MAGIC. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. And if you're in Australia, you can dial 02-833-5668. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast, but no matter how you call us, just remember to keep your message under 60 seconds and get rid of the background noise, please. Also on MuggleCast.com, you can find a handy feedback form to contact any one of us, or just use our first name at staff.mugglenet.com. And of course, we have the community outlets, including the MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, and the fan listing and the forums that are located at MuggleCastFan.net. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, the show at dig.com, and vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley. As always, thank you everyone for listening. Here's to another 150 more episodes. Hey!
Wow.
Oh. What? I don't know about that.
I think
that.
You should
just kidding.
You should play it out with the original intro, or you should intro the show with the original intro that you used.
Okay.
Back.
Okay, sure.
Oh, you mean back in the old days? The spoiler alert?
Yeah. Well, no. This is the original intro with
MuggleNet.com's brand new podcasting feature. Episode 1.
Yeah, that.
Oh, I remember that.
Feature. MuggleNet's new podcasting feature.
You sounded so young then.
So when are you going to put this out?
Yeah, I really have changed. My voice has evolved. Tomorrow. Oh, we still got to wrap things up. So, once again, I am Andrew Sims.
I am Laura Thompson.
And I'm Matt Britton.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week for episode 151. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 150 episodes and still the same problems.